Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a very special guest today, and that is Alan Resnick. He's a writer, editor-in-chief of a variety of dog show magazines over the past many decades. And Alan is going to talk to us today about a lot of things, kind of how media interacts with the purebred dog fancy, how advertising has changed, and is that for better or for worse, or maybe all of the above? So welcome, Alan. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Laura. I'm delighted to be here.
You know, you have a lot of experience as an editor of the magazines. You are also a judge, so you've encountered advertising from the other end of it. How, in your estimation, how successful is advertising for a dog that is being shown at a competitive level in the aim for whatever ranking they're choosing? And what is, in your estimation, the most successful ad or advertising campaign? So our listeners are out there, they've got their dog. What should they do and what should they not do?
All right. I think regular show dog advertising is definitely helpful in the case of a newly recognized breed or a rare breed. You want to catch the judge's attention. You want to break through at the group level. And sometimes judges need to give themselves permission to recognize or acknowledge a dog. And if that ceiling is broken, then other judges will follow suit. And putting a dog out with a handler, having it shown in the most high-profile way, and advertising is going to be, for better or for worse, a successful way of getting the dog noticed. I think introducing a new dog to the fancy, a great way to launch a dog's career. I think some ads are more successful than others. I'm always a believer that less is more. There are a lot of ads out with dozens of postage stamp sized win photos. I find those ads terribly busy. I don't know that anyone is going to pull out a magnifying glass to see who all put the dog up. I don't understand the purpose of those ads. I think a lot of designers are very young, and they sometimes forget the age of the average exhibitor, the age of the average judge. This isn't Vanity Fair. This isn't Vogue. So the ads can look very chic and very glamorous, but if you can't find or read the name of the dog, the name of the breeder, all of that relevant information, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. I always think that a dramatic non-show photo that captures the spirit of the dog or the relationship that exists between dog and handler is always a great idea. That's just advertising gold. Think of the iconic photo of Frank Sabella running on the beach with that white standard poodle Bart leaping in the air. Think of Pat Trotter on the beach with Vagabond. Right. Think of Kay Finch running on the beach. Maybe the secret is finding a beach.
Running on the beach. I think that's definitely the answer.
You know, why mess with success?
Right.
But you can certainly wonderful, engaging photos that show off the dog to advantage. And because they break the mold, I think those are really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I have an aversion to, because I think it's terribly pretentious, is an ad that quotes the standard alongside the dog. There are many styles of dog that still hold true to the standard. And I think to be showing a dog on the move and plastering a paragraph on gait from your standard really, I think, belittles a judge and says that the judge isn't capable of finding a great moving representative of the breed without your reciting the standard to them. Other people may differ. I'm really put off by those ads. I think less is more. I think in the case of unusual breeds or uncommon breeds, there can certainly be an element of education involved. Parent clubs can certainly do something about running a series of ads in which they zero in each month on a different detail of the dog, on a different body part. Some standards are just 6 pages long and really technical. They might be direct translation of country of origin, and they do need to help a judge as a breed is becoming more familiar in the country. And those are things that an ad should do. I don't think Facebook should be tasked with the responsibility. And I don't think, you know, a single exhibitor who's posting madly on social media should be the one who's entrusted to educate judges on the breed. That truly should be the parent club that says, well, you know, maybe we can look at our discretionary budget and maybe this would be a smart thing to do.
I really like that, Alan. That's kind of a cool concept that I have not seen done. I would love to see that from some of these, particularly the new breeds, right?
Yeah. Oh, about a decade ago, when Tibetan Mastiffs were first introduced to the AKC, ATMA, in a series of ads, illustrated head type, illustrated body, and I think that was a very useful thing. Judges could clip those ads, and as long as those ads are not self-serving or pushing a certain style of dog, I think they can be extremely helpful. And even an individual exhibitor with an individual dog can certainly indicate in their ad copy that we feel that this dog is correct in such and such a way. This dog is strong in a breed quality that we're losing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's absolutely appropriate. But to be quoting chapter and verse from a breed standard, I think, is just a little bit inappropriate. Let the judge find the dog. Breeds are being recognized at an incredibly fast pace. And if there isn't a show photo, there are going to be judges that are going to scratch their heads and say, is it a black Tibetan Terrier? Is it a Japanese? But at Dogs in Review, every ad, even those that came in camera ready, always the breed name in full at the bottom of each ad.
It was one of the things I loved, actually, about that magazine, because as the breeds were coming in, if I'd look at them, like, what in the heck? Oh, okay, now I know what it is.
You know, I mean, I know, as a hound person, it's going to be very interesting next year with the Azawakh's arrival.
Oh my gosh, right?
Picture a hound group lineup that contains a red smooth Saluki, a red greyhound, a plot, a red bone, a red Slugi, and a red Azawakh.
Yeah.
That, I think, we need to provide an educational component wherever we can.
Absolutely.
And a very discreet insertion of a breed name at the bottom of an ad, I think, is not going to face anyone's ad, and it's certainly going to be educational and helpful to judges, though, who perhaps are too proud to ask, but maybe a little bit overwhelmed. You can certainly include information in your ad without dumbing down the ad, but certainly create an ad that is both elegant and eye-catching, but also has an educational component.
Our roundup questions, we'll start with the lead-in question to share with our listeners your extensive experience as an editor and a writer, your three favorite dog books. What three books should every single dog exhibitor, breeder, owner have on their shelf?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, I think preface this by saying that there are books like Born to Win, Pat Trotter's book, Rick Beauchamp's seminal book. Everyone must have those.
Yes.
So let me say that going in. I thought about favorite books, and there are great breed books, but the three titles I chose are, I think, very special for three different reasons. So getting away from the classics that everyone must have, Pat Trotter's and the Rick Beauchamp's books, one book that I recommend for humor and for perspective is a little book that's still available on Amazon called Dog Eat Dog, a very human book about dogs and dog shows. And it's written by Jane and Michael Stern. Jane and Michael Stern are not dog people, but they're a couple and they are two of my very favorite writers because I'm into food and I love food books and I love travel. They are foodies and they are travel writers, and they spent a year traveling on the dog show circuit, and they focused on an exhibitor in the Bullmastiff ring. This goes back to the 70s or 80s. So it was written in the era of Alan Levine. And yes. So they wrote about Alan's famous hat, and it really is delightful. It's just a really delicious book, and it's great fun. And it pokes gentle fun in the way that Best in Show, the movie, the
Right.
Monty.
Right.
Just a good read.
Awesome.
My second choice is The Dog Show by William F. Stifel. And Mr. Stifel, for those who have the privilege of knowing him, a one-time official of the AKC in Westminster, a lovely, gentle, articulate man. And this is an homage to Westminster. It's a celebration of all the Best in Show winners at the Garden. It's a beautiful coffee table book, gorgeous glossy photos, and just a really special book. And I treasure my copy. And it's one that people will enjoy. Mr. Stifel did a book signing at Westminster, and the lineup of people in and around the benching area was really added to the congestion. Everyone was with a copy of the book signed by Bill Stifel.
Wow.
The third book is Best in Show, The World of Show Dogs and Dog Shows, written by Bo Bengtsson.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, it was published by Kennel Club Books, a division of Bowtie, which was the company that I worked for, and Bowtie published Dogs in Review, and it's a very special book for its sheer scholarship.
I love that book. Love, 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 love.
Bo is one of our great historians in the sport. It's just the exhaustive research, just a brilliant book. If you have a question about the name of a dog, did it have an apostrophe S in its name? Bo will answer that question for you. It's a very beautiful book, and it really is a must. So those are three books in my dog library that I treasure, and I believe our listeners will enjoy them as well.
Excellent. Excellent. I love those. I'm going to have to check out Dog Eat Dog. I've seen Stifel's book. I have not owned it, but Dog Eat Dog sounds very, very interesting.
Fun.
I'm going to have to go find that. Absolutely. Okay. And then for our closeout question, this is a new sort of fun thing that we've added to the show, and I already have people raving about it. So after 40 years of watching dogs and watching dog shows and editing magazines and writing about dogs, your all-time dream Best in Show lineup. What seven dogs would you want to see in the ring together if you could magically make them appear, and which one would win Best in Show?
My goodness. All right. This was an exciting question and also a frustrating one because there were so many great dogs that came to mind in each of the groups. But in the end, I must wax nostalgic and resurrect a few people and dogs from our past for my dream lineup. Representing the sporting group Dugan, the Irish Water Spaniel, shown by Bill Trainer throughout his career for Anne Snelling. I saw this dog both in Canada and in the U.S. Just a rollicking clown, everything the breed should be. Fun and jovial and correct. And I think he won many admirers and put the breed on the map. Certainly having won Best in Show at the Garden. And Bill Trainer, one of the classiest handlers we've ever had. So he was a really cool dog.
Awesome.
For the hound group, one of my very favorite Afghan hounds, Champion Kaftan Corrigan, owned by the two Carols, Carol Reisman and Carol Esterkin. Corey was a classic black Afghan hound. He won the National Specialty at 9 years of age under Mary Nelson Stevenson. It was her retirement show. It was his retirement show. And he was just a dog for the ages, a really classic dog. So he would be my hound choice. For working, lots of potential dogs to choose. In the end, I went with Lena Basquet and Special K.
Aww.
The one black mask fawn bitch, and I think of Lena and Special K floating around the ring together. Flamboyant handler, great, great bitch, very special. I see that my list contains a lot of bitches.
That's good.
For terrier, I went with Binny. Cilium Terrier, Champion Dursaid, Bobby's Girl, a cilium that was shown by Peter Green for Dorothy Weimer. She was a huge winner in the mid-70s, Best in Show at the Garden, a wonderful breed. We don't see many Sealies, and I think she too put the breed on the map for many people in the sport, and also for non-dog people watching. She really was great fun, and Peter showed her to perfection. For the toy group, I chose J-Max Impossible Dream, a Min Pin that Joe Waterman showed. He's a really neat, one of the top dogs all breeds in the mid-1970s, and just a great winning dog and a great performing dog in a group that is often dominated by coated breeds. This is a Min Pin, classic Hackney gait. Joe Waterman, in his heyday, looking very dashing. He has a great fondness for the breed and showed this dog impeccably. For non-sporting, goodness gracious, there are so many choices I could have gone with. I went with Eyes Mickey Moto on fifth, shown by Wendell Samet. I adore Wendell. And to see Mickey win the group at the Garden, that dog represented decades and decades of beautiful standard poodle breeding by Mrs. Kaiser and Wendell. And Mickey was proudly bred and co-owned by Karen LaFrac, who always gave credit where credit was due as far as Wendell was concerned. So my dream lineup would have Wendell in the best in show ring. And in my herding group, I scratched my head wondering if she was around when the herding and working groups were split, but it was the German bitch Altana's Mystique with Jimmy Moser for Mrs. Firestone. What an amazing bitch. That, to me, I'm getting goosebumps just talking to you about it. I just think that would be a dream lineup that represents several decades of dogs. Great dogs, great people. Who would I get best in show with? Golly. I have a feeling Dugan would just be a clown and outshow all of the others. So I might go with Dugan, the Irish Water Spaniel. But honestly, if they were all on their toes and all showing, it would be an awfully hard for any show judge.
I'm telling you, I have goosebumps imagining this lineup. It is so incredible. I love that. Ugh.
For anyone listening who doesn't know any of these dogs, please find them, Google them, go to Beau's book. They are very special. You need to know these dogs. And, of course, among these dogs are handlers, owner-handlers, who went on to become very illustrious judges.
Right.
Jimmy Moser, Errol Reisman, lots of folks.
Right. I will try to track down. I have Beau's book here, so hopefully I'll be able to find photos of all of these dogs that we can include with the website post on this. So that will be very cool.
Book should contain all of them. I found the Sealy in Beau's book.
Okay.
Now, Captain Friggin, he may be the toughest one because he was not a winner at the old breed multi-best in show level. But Carol Reisman could certainly get you a photo, and, you know, I have a couple more suggestions. But honestly, if you found photos of five of the seven, I think that would suffice.
Excellent. Well, thank you very, very much, Alan. I really appreciate your time on a Saturday morning, and I know our listeners do as well, because there's so much knowledge here and so much history and so much good advice. So thank you very, very much.
That's a great compliment.
All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy, and Allison is going to give us her tip of the week. So how are you doing, Allison?
I'm great today, Laura. How are you?
Excellent.
Good.
And what is our tip today?
So today I wanted to talk about having whiskers on our show dogs.
Ooh, this is a good one.
Yes. You know, I've recently been around a lot of people with new show dogs, you know, and they have like maybe Australian Shepherds or some breeds that maybe some people take the whiskers off and some people are like, they never take the whiskers off. And these people are new to shows. And like in one case, like the wife was like, yeah, I'm in it to win it. I want to take the whiskers off. But the husband's like, no, he needs to have his whiskers on. And, you know, then people come to me and ask my opinion, right? So, I mean, we all know that your dog's whiskers do not change the quality of your dog. Your dog is the same quality, whether it has those whiskers or not, right?
Yep.
And those breeds that are diehard, you must leave the whiskers on. I totally get it. I never trim the whiskers off those breeds. So I'm talking about those breeds where it's kind of like a judgment call, right?
Right.
And so what I tell people is, under some judges in some places, maybe you're going to look more like a novice if you're first starting out, if you do leave the whiskers on, right? Because you have these little tells and these little gives that you give that kind of show that you're a novice. And then maybe whiskers could be seen as lack of grooming instead of just like an obvious choice that you wanted to leave the whiskers on.
Right.
So I always kind of look at it and I kind of say, well, you know, if you're worried about your grooming at all, whiskers are something that you can do really, really well. So kind of like start there, right? But to go beyond that, in my personal opinion, you know, if I'm showing a breed and the owners really want to have the whiskers left on, is I'll just take an overall look at the dog, right? So if your dog has, you know, like a pretty pleasing black face and then this one big giant tree trunk white whisker sticking out sideways, well, you know, that is distracting, right? And remember that our judge only has like a couple seconds to actually make your dog. And maybe the last thing they see is this giant whisker. They might not notice how beautiful your dog's face is because they find that distracting. And I'm talking like in the heat of the moment rash decision, right?
Right.
And so maybe you just want to take off that one offending whisker. If all the other whiskers are little fine black whiskers on a black face and there's one big gray one, maybe just take that one off, right? So kind of I'm saying, make it look aesthetically pleasing. If you look at that dog, I tell people, if you don't notice the whiskers, they're fine being left on. But if you look at that dog's face and all you see are those giant black whiskers on a white face or gray whiskers on a black face, then I think that you need to make it as aesthetically pleasing as possible. So that's kind of where I come from when people ask me.
Yep. I kind of agree with you on that one. You know, sometimes some of these dogs we get, we call them walrus whiskers, right?
Right. Just like that's crazy. A good name for it.
Yep. They're kind of crazy whiskers. And I have people give me a hard time all the time about my pug dogs because I don't take their eyebrow whiskers off, right? Because that is so important for their little eyeballs as a safety feature. And they said, oh, you didn't groom your pug. Yeah, I did. See, it's only the eyeballs.
Yeah, so. I just want them to have eyes for their whole lives.
Eyes for their whole lives. Exactly right. So great, great input on that one, Allison. Thank you so much. Listeners, don't forget Pure Dog Talk 25. And that is your 25% discount code when you check out of a Leading Edge Dog Show Academy course. And you can have a cup of coffee on us. So thank you, Allison.
Thanks, Laura.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.